Well, as many of you saw when you came in today, the garage sale is still going on downstairs. As I mentioned earlier, we had a lot of success with it yesterday, and we're going to leave it up for a couple days here and see what we can't get from it. I like doing garage sales. My wife and I usually do a garage sale about once a year. I enjoy it. It's an opportunity to go through and clean stuff out, and get rid of it, and make a little bit of money. And one of my favorite years we did the garage sale, we had really gone through with a fine-tooth comb. I mean, we had seriously evaluated the stuff that we had and said, you know, do we really need this? Do we use it? Are we ever going to use it? Is this just a project we bought that we're never going to get to? We hauled it all out to our driveway, and I was sitting there doing it. It was about a three-day garage sale, and one day this lady comes into the garage sale. She's looking around, and she says, well, you don't have what I'm looking for. So she turns to leave. My wife says, what are you looking for? The lady said, I'm looking for a twin bed for my granddaughter. My wife said, we have a twin bed. I sat there, my little money box, counting the money for the day, and I thought, the only twin bed we have is my daughter's bed. But sure enough, next thing I know, my wife's leading this lady into our house. A couple minutes later, my wife comes out, and she goes, you need to haul Abby's bed to her truck. Okay? So I go in, strip the sheets off of it, take the mattress, the box springs out, take the frame out, the headboard, the footboard. Off the lady goes. I don't know what she gave us for it, you know, $50, who knows. A couple hours later, I'm sitting there in the driveway, and my daughter gets home from school. She's about sixth grade, you know, she's about 11 or 12. She comes walking up the driveway. She goes, how's the sale going? I said, great, we sold your bed. She said, whatever, shut up. And walked into the house, and I just sat there and waited. About 30 seconds later, she comes running out the front door. Where's my bed? Your mother sold it. That's what happens. You're not here to guard your stuff. We had the garage sale downstairs, and it went well this weekend. And, you know, garage sales, though, are the weirdest things. When you really sit down and think about it. You go through your stuff, and you decide you're going to get rid of something. You don't want it anymore in your house. It's taken up space, it's clutter, it's now worthless to you for whatever reason. We have a name for other stuff like that, we call it trash, right? But something happens with this trash. On the way to the trash can, we stop in the driveway or in the yard and see if we can con our friends or strangers into giving us money for it. Will you pay me for my refuse? I don't want this thing, I'm gonna throw it away. But if you'll give me a dollar, I can put it in your car. George Carlin, the comedian, often talked about the fact that, you know, other people's stuff is real junk, but our junk is good stuff. I've helped other people clean out before, clean out their house or their storage spaces, maybe because they're moving or needing to get rid of a bunch of things. And I tell you, when I help somebody else do it, it's much easier. Right? I'm really good at standing in the midst of somebody else's pile and going, this is all crap. You should throw all of, there is no reason anybody should have this junk. It's easy to do then. I don't have a connection to it. I don't have a history with it. I don't have a memory of it. When it comes to cleaning out our own junk, all of a sudden, well, there's some value to that, you know. There's almost a desire to prove that I didn't waste my money, my time, my resources, my space on something that's going to end up just being junk. You can always tell the people who have the most trouble with making this distinction when you go to a garage sale and see what their prices are. If someone has to laud me with the story of what this item would go for in the store, how valuable this item is, or how much I would pay for it if it were new, I know we're in trouble. They're asking too much money for this thing. The purpose of the garage sale, remember, is to get rid of your trash. I price all my garage sale items cheap enough that you want to put them in your car. That is my goal every time. I have removed this from my life. I don't want it. I don't want to move it back in. It has made it out of my house this far. What's it going to take for you to take it? People start telling me how this item is very valuable. I I feel like stopping to remind them that this very valuable item is sitting on their lawn. We're standing in your driveway. We're not at Macy's. This item is so valuable. If you want it that much, put it back inside the house. You don't want to let go of it. You just put it in the driveway for people to admire. What it is a problem with self-reflection. We have a difficulty being able to look around and truly assess ourselves. One of the items I brought to the garage sale, I put together, everything I brought to the garage sale, I put together, and the ladies would look at it and they go, what's that? And one of the things I brought, I was almost embarrassing to put it together, I put it together and they said, what is that? And I said, that is a Yo Nana. And they said, what's a Yo Nana? And I said, well, you put frozen bananas in it and they come out as mushed frozen bananas. And that's pretty much it. They said, how much is it worth? I said, whatever somebody will take it for. Right? But at some point, I put a value on it. I paid money to take that into my house. I bought the bananas and put them in the freezer. And I stuffed them into this thing, and it came out as frozen banana goo. At that moment, I knew this is going to be garage sale fodder. I just know it. Just looking at it now. We always have a problem with self-reflection, with self-application. Being able to truly discern our own things, to truly evaluate. Being able to realistically and truthfully assess ourselves. We're great at assessing others. In the church, we call that judging. Right? And Jesus told us not to, but let's be honest, Jesus told us not to do a lot of things. We're not so good at that list all the time. Right? We're good at assessing others. We're good at judging others. We can look at another and I can tell them all the sin they have in their life. If they would like a list, I can even alphabetize it. I'm good at that. But it's when we turn that mirror, that focus back on ourselves, that we start to stumble. We start to have some problems. Both of our scriptures deal with this today. In the first one, David, King David is confronted with his own sins around Bathsheba. Now remember the story, David's out on the palace roof one day and he sees this beautiful woman bathing. And rather than turn his eyes, he sends his servants to get her and they bring her to the palace and he has a romantic liaison with her. And she becomes with child. And he gets nervous, right? Oh my goodness, because she's a married woman. So he calls her husband, who is one of his soldiers fighting in his war, Uriah. He brings Uriah home and he says, hey, Uriah, welcome home. You should go sleep with your wife. Hoping that Uriah will do so and then think the child is his, but Uriah has too much honor for that. He says, I can't do that when my men are at war. And David's like, oh, for crying out loud, just kill him then, just kill him. So he does, he kills him. Sends him back to the front, has the general put him out in front of the army, has the army pull back, Uriah gets killed. Problem solved. Then he moves, we pick up the scripture this morning, he moves Bathsheba into the palace with him. And everything is hunky-dory for David. Till he meets his friend Nathan one day. God sends Nathan with a message. Nathan comes up and says, hey, I want to tell you a little story. There were two men in a certain city. One was rich, one was poor. The rich man had a whole lot of flocks and herds. The poor man had one. He had one little ewe lamb that he'd raised since it was a baby. It was almost like a pet to him. I mean, he kept it in the house, and they fed it from his own plate, and it drank from his own cup, and he held it like it was a child. One day, a traveler comes to the rich man's house, and as is customary, when you had a traveler in those times, you should prepare a meal. But the rich man goes, I don't want to waste any of my flocks on it. So he goes to the poor man. He takes the one lamb that he has, the one that he cares so much about, and that's the lamb that he serves up for dinner that night. Nathan tells David this story, and David is shocked. Scripture says David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. And David said, as the Lord lives, the man who has done this deserves to die. Nathan says, David, you are the man. Dun, dun, dun. Right? This is where the dramatic music comes in. David couldn't see his own sin. He was so wrapped up in his lust for Bathsheba that he turned a blind eye to his own sins. But when Nathan was able to describe it as somebody else's sin, David saw it right away. He knew that's wrong. That's not okay. We're going to bring justice to this situation. And Nathan's like, yeah, good luck with that, big guy. It's easy to see sin in another, but when we turn that mirror on ourselves, we aren't so quick to decide. The same thing occurs in Luke. Jesus goes to eat at the home of Simon the Pharisee. A woman comes in, a woman who would not have a great reputation in the town. She comes in, and this woman, we don't know exactly how she's been touched by Jesus, but Jesus has somehow changed her, has loved her, has done something. She believes that Jesus is going to free her from the burden she's carrying, and she's so overwhelmed by that love and that grace and that forgiveness. She comes in, she's crying on his feet, and she's washing his feet off. She's drying them with her hair, and she's putting ointment on his feet, and she's kissing his feet. She is just so overwhelmed with love. And Simon, the house owner, the Pharisee, Simon looks over and he says, you know, if Jesus knew what kind of woman this was, he wouldn't let her touch him. I mean, this woman is the worst of the worst, right? She is horrible. The thing, I could tell you everything she's done. I could make a list. It's horrible stuff. Jesus, if you only knew, you wouldn't let her anywhere near you. And Jesus turns to Simon and says, hey, Simon, let me tell you a story. Anytime in the Gospels that Jesus stops to tell a story, you know you're in trouble, don't you? Anytime that he stops and goes, hey, I got a story for you. You know the people on the other end should be going, oh, what'd I do? What did I do wrong? When I worked at Boys Town with my wife, whenever my kids would get in trouble, and I'd have to talk to them about it, I always started with the same phrase. I always said, you know what? And after a while, they got to know what that meant. They'd do something wrong, and I'd say, oh, you know what? And they'd be like, I'm sorry. I hadn't even told you yet, but yes, you're sorry. You're right, you are. Well, Jesus' phrase was, I've got a story to tell you. So he tells him a story that has to do with grace, forgiveness, appreciation, thanksgiving. How to those whom much is forgiven, love more. Then he points something out to Simon. He says, Simon, you know, I entered your house and you gave me no water for my feet. You gave me no kiss. You did not anoint my head with oil. These would all have been standard welcoming practices in a home when you had a revered guest. You would do all these things. If Simon hadn't done them, as a Pharisee, he probably figured he was pretty well set with God. There was no need to go above and beyond here. But this woman of ill repute, she's bathed my feet with her tears. She's dried them with her hair. From the time I came in, she's not stopped kissing my feet. She's anointed my feet with ointment. Simon sees her sins and sees them as a stopping block, as an obstacle to getting close to God. And Simon judges her to be unworthy, when in reality it is his own sins, his own shortcomings that are the real obstacle, because he can't see them. So he doesn't know how to remove them. I do like garage sales a lot. They're cathartic. They're very cleansing. It is therapeutic to go back, to go through your life and get rid of the stuff that is crammed into the corners, that is just taking up space, that is holding us back from truly enjoying all that we have. It's refreshing to step back into your house after a big sale. Marvel at all the space you've freed up, the clutter that has been disseminated, the mess that has been removed. You feel like you can start the next day fresh and renewed. Removing the clutter of our sins is the same. Those mistakes, those shortcomings, those peccadilloes that we stuff in every nook and cranny of our lives, they need to be gone. We can see it in others. We see the sin they're holding on to. We shake our heads. We wonder, what are they waiting for? Just get rid of that stuff. You don't need it. When the light is turned and focused on our own pile of stuff, we hesitate. We stumble. It's much harder to see our own mess, to root out the dark corners and throw it out into the light. Who knows? We might miss the pain. We might miss the hurt. We might, We might miss that awful memory and what it reminds us of. But we won't. Getting rid of it will free us. What sin are you turning that blind eye to today? What junk are you holding on to in your life that is taking from you? What stuff is it that you just need to let go? Jesus comes around like our very own spiritual got junk hauler. Ready to scoop it all up, toss it all out, let us start fresh. But we have to let him. My daughter walked into a bedroom where there was no longer a bed. And she wasn't sure what she was going to do. How am I going to go to bed tonight? How am I going to go to sleep now that you've gotten rid of that? Here's what I didn't tell you. My daughter, for those of you who know her, my daughter's 6 foot tall. Even at the age of 12, she was way too tall for a twin bed. Her little feet would hang off the end of it. So we'd been talking for some time about she really needs a bigger bed. She needs like a queen size bed or a full size bed. But we just, because that other bed was there, we just couldn't quite do it, just couldn't quite pull that trigger. But by golly, when all there is a big space on the floor, you find your way to the mattress store pretty quick. By that night, she had a much bigger bed, a much nicer bed in her room. All was well, but she wouldn't have gotten it if we hadn't gotten rid of the old stuff. She couldn't have moved on to something new. Jesus comes around to haul that garbage, that junk that you're holding on to off, that stuff that's crowding you out of your own spirit, holding you back from your life, but he can't take it away if you don't let him.